In this episode of Movie Rollers, we're going to review Lee Daniels, the butler, or Lee Daniels is the butler.
No, Lee Daniels, the butler.
Lee Daniels, the butler, and the act of killing. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, the show is for you. We're recovering here from a production error. For some reason, my record button didn't work, or whatever happened. We just started this episode and we're restarting, so...
I should say it's a very rare...
It's very rare,
error. It's
yes.
Almost never happened. Maybe yes. Once before, yeah.
Oh, that's right. That's why I stopped using GarageBand. For those of you who are producing podcasts, do not record directly into GarageBand. It will fail you.
Sooner or later.
Anyway, so we have two movies to talk about today. One is Lee Daniels, the butler, and the other is The Act of Killing. I figured we could start with The Act of Killing, a movie that we saw at LA Film Festival. So, Yazdi, you're going to give us a quick intro on that.
Indeed, we did see this at the LA Film Festival. The Act of Killing announces its importance by virtue of producers who are as heavyweight as they get in the world of documentaries, namely Werner Herzog and Errol Morris. This documentary is about powerful men in Indonesia who are venerated within their country, even when it is openly known that they were responsible for the systemic killing of thousands in the late 60s. Leaders of death squads that ordered the murders of political opponents, intellectuals, as well as for the ethnic cleansing of many races, including Chinese, within Indonesia, these men are now treated as heroes in their own country. For the purpose of this documentary, the filmmaker Joshua Oppenheimer gave these men the opportunity to recreate and reenact the mass killings. And what he captures on camera is truly surprising, both surreal as well as harrowing. We all saw this documentary, and it's getting a lot of buzz. It's getting a lot of ink in the media, and I'm eager to talk about it. In fact, I remember when we were driving back from LA Film Festival, we broke the cardinal rule.
Well, we kind of do at film festivals, so yeah. Just again for people who may be tuning into Movie Wallace for the first time. We never talk about movies before we record them on the podcast, mm-hmm. So the conversation that you hear is fresh, or should be, but the film festival circuit is one where we tend to break that rule simply because there may not be opportunities later on to talk about those movies. So we do tend to kind of discuss them, and this is a movie that we have discussed ahead of time. But yeah, I kind of already know what you guys think of the movie, but let's talk about it for the listeners. So... Rashmi?
Yeah, this is one of the most unbelievable documentaries I've ever watched because the subject matter itself is so unbelievable, and how these crazy men, I don't know how else to describe it, how these crazy men are on display for us to watch and how they've justified their life. It's mind-blowing. I mean, I'm just speechless.
This movie has changed me as a person. I mean, it really has. I think I look at humanity as a very different thing, having watched this movie and these people and the way that they perpetrated their crimes and the way that their crimes have been handled. And, you know, there's that saying that the history of war is told by the people who won. And so oftentimes the people who were defeated were portrayed as the oppressors and as the evil people, and the people who won were portrayed as heroes and legends. Well, you know, here's a classic example of that occurring in our lifetime, where people who literally have killed thousands of people by their own hand in very violent ways speak of it as if they're doing nothing more than stepping on an ant. And perhaps not even that. They don't even give them the respect that you might have. Just the way that I look at people, the way I look at what the human animal is capable of doing has completely changed since watching this movie. I can't I can't get this movie out of my head. It disturbs me every time I think about it. I'm already feeling tense and uneasy discussing it with you guys because I haven't spoken about it for a few weeks. Yeah, what a very, very powerful, powerful piece of filmmaking.
Yeah, I think this movie is one of the best examples on film about how evil gets rationalized in the real world. I mean, if there ever was a representation of evil in a human being, you can see it in these characters. And I don't think I'm very quick to judge when I say that. I mean, these people have done horrific things. And they speak about it, like you said, Joe, like they were describing, and they reenact some of these as if they were describing how they cooked a pot of pasta. I mean, they're so dispassionate. And I guess if they were dispassionate, even that would be understandable, but there's almost pride in it. I mean, they take pride in all the stuff that they did. And to see somebody being so, unapologetic about these horrific, horrific things they've done is really striking. I mean, I think that's one of the things that's the movie's singular achievement, that they got these people somehow to speak about this at all. So I commend the movie for that. However, I do want to say that this movie is also one of the most bizarre and surreal movies I've seen. So there's this whole part about these people, you know, confessing to what they've done. But then there are entire periods in this movie where there's this weird reenactment with these characters and this weird music. And there's almost like Hollywood-style numbers which are thrown in. And I found all of that very disquieting, almost unbearable to watch, and almost made me question. All documentaries carry the burden of, you know, by virtue of the camera, people's behavior changes. And I kind of questioned, you know, how complicit were the filmmakers in what you're seeing on the screen. So I think this movie raises all kinds of very big questions.
Yeah.
I don't know if I think the filmmakers are completely off the hook in terms of what you see. So I kind of question some of that, but be that as it may, this is the very fact that we are even having these kind of discussions speaks to the success of the movie.
Yeah. So again, and I think I sound like a broken record, because every time we talk about a good documentary, we always have to say, you know, it's hard to separate the filmmaking from the content of the movie because they're one and the same, really, especially in a really good documentary. I think the genius of this particular documentary is the filmmakers have done something quite amazing. I think what they set out to get was, how do we get these men who take pride in what they did to tell us how they did it? So let's, you know, these guys were obsessed with movie. It's a movie about movie lovers in a sense. These killers, these horrible, horrible killers, these monsters love movie. And so the filmmakers basically went to them and said, why don't you reenact in a movie style of your choice? Mm-hmm. How you did the killings. That's really what they're trying to get. I think the genius of the movie is that as a result of trying to do that, finally, there was some retribution that these guys kind of came to. They finally, at least one of them I saw, as a result of going through and reenacting, finally understood the horrificness of his crime. And that part of the movie, I think, is genius. So I think the bizarro world stuff, Yazdi, I think it's the mechanism that allows us to see how crazy these people are, because they're able to disconnect themselves and reenact their crime in the theme of Bollywood or Western or whatever they've chosen for that particular killing. But for me, it's the reaction that follows after their realization of what they've done, which was amazing.
Yes, you and I spoke about that because we had somewhat differing opinions about whether or not this person who had killed hundreds, if not thousands, of people by his own hand was really regretful or not. I tended to side with Rashmi in that regard. You, I know, felt that it was somewhat disingenuous.
Some of it felt to me like it was an act, that eventually he realized that the only way he could get the camera to sympathize with him was if he maybe showed some degree of, you know,
remorse. Yeah.
But yeah.
I mean, what's amazing to me is, you know, I think these filmmakers have put themselves in quite a precarious, unsafe position. Yes. And if you remember, guys, when the credits are rolling, a lot of people have even refused to put their names in the credits. So you have, like, you know, for example, Cameraman Anonymous, you know, First Grip Anonymous. A lot of people have chosen to not put their name on this movie because I think they're scared. These people are still alive and around.
Clearly, the political situation in Indonesia is one that is
volatile.
Volatile. And I think there's a lot of people in power in Indonesia who have, I mean, they rule by force, right? So the politics of the country there are such that portraying these people as anything other than heroes, portraying the regime perhaps for what it actually is rather than what it purports to be, is a very dangerous thing in a society where they don't have necessarily freedom of speech. I mean, you know, I tend not to think of Indonesia as one of these places run by dictators, but really it is a country that has a very bad political situation, and the people in that country are essentially oppressed. They have certain freedoms, but they're certainly not politically free.
Yeah, I'm surprised the filmmaker Joshua Oppenheimer didn't just change his name and use, you know, some kind of
Well, they know who he was. I mean, he was obviously there throughout the filmmaking.
Yeah.
I mean, they refer to him on camera very often as Josh through the entire movie. I just, going back to what you said earlier, it's a long movie, and there are entirely these long swaths of, you know, what you see on the screen where these people are doing this bizarre dance almost of pretending, you know, they're play acting the whole thing, and they're kind of indulging their love of cinema. And I just found it so surreal and so unpleasant to watch. And maybe that's the intended reaction.
Yeah. I mean, I think this movie had me just feeling uneasy at, you know, it was more than just the fact that these people did horrible things. Cause you know, you put the History Channel on and you watch anything about World War II and you see.
Or even the Mafia. I mean, let's even bring it more recently. You know, if you speak.
But World War II, in terms of genocide, you know, people who have killed hundreds of people by their own hand is, you know, the kind of parallel. But I think the thing that disturbed me more than anything with the way that this movie portrayed them was it was just their matter of factness. It was the fact that these murders were celebrated, right? It was the fact that society almost rallied around these people and celebrated what they were doing because of the propaganda that was portrayed. You know, these people are cold-blooded murderers that
monsters
have killed thousands of people. But I guess in the same way that we might view SEAL Team 6, they went into a place, they killed a bunch of people, and now we look at them as heroes. You know, this is kind of how that society celebrates these individuals who clearly are psychopaths. I mean, it's that spin on what they've done that they are held in such esteem, and that they walk around with this level of respect and impunity. Just it's frightening to me.
Yeah, but I think from what I saw of the film, I don't think they're regarded highly. I think the people who are around them who regard them highly are very scared of them and feel that their only choice is to regard them highly. Otherwise, they'll be punished, maybe.
I mean, I saw a lot of collusion. I mean, everybody, the ministers, you know. Yeah. I mean, these people are considered the founding members of this whole paramilitary organization. You know, they have soldiers, and you know, they interview a newspaper editor who is completely in collusion with these men. I mean, what greater evidence do you need of how far things have gone when, you know, the chief editor of the newspaper is in collusion with this mass murder? Yeah. I mean, it's horrifying.
Frightening stuff.
I think we could talk about this movie all night.
Yeah,
could. But genius title.
Yes.
Let's begin wrap-ups. And, you know, for me, I think this movie is, it's really hard for me to recommend that anyone go see this movie, because you will come out upset, and I think you will come out somewhat traumatized. I do feel traumatized, and this is a really strange experience for me because I can't remember a movie that has quite affected me in the same way. I really do feel like it's changed me as a person. it almost defies rating. You know, it's not entertainment in any way, shape, or form. I don't want to give it a score. I don't want to tell you to go watch
it. Oh, come on!
You have to score it.
You have to score it.
It's impossible for me. I mean, okay.
That's fine.
I can't say it's
don't
good.
Don't be such a rollover.
Okay.
You have to score.
It's exceptionally well made, but, you know, if I gave it a 10 out of 10 because I think it's required viewing and that everyone should see it, but nobody should see, you know, I mean, I just don't know. What does that mean? What does that mean to anybody if I say this is a 9 out of 10 movie? What does that mean?
It means that it's an important film for people to watch.
Like... Anyway, finish what you're saying.
But I think it's too distressing for many people to watch. I don't think many people out there should certainly avoid this material because I mean, there was pin drop silence as we left that movie theater.
Yeah, there was.
There was not one person there who was not deeply emotionally affected by what they had seen. There was no chit chat. There was no.
Correct. It was quite a surreal banter. Experience.
There was very somber.
Yeah. It was very
nobody
somber.
Was walking out thinking about what they were going to do tomorrow or talking about. Everyone was just dead silent. And that kind of level of emotional devastation stayed
with
me.
Okay, we'll let you off scoring then.
Yeah.
Yes,
9, 10, score what you want. It's too hard.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question that it's an act of amazement that they found this topic to make a movie because it's so powerful. This is really one of the most, you know, even setting aside the very, very upsetting content in the movie, I just found the movie so bizarre and surreal and really unpleasant to watch in parts. And maybe that's where the power lies. So I would not recommend anybody watch this movie, but I still think this is a very important movie. I barely sat through it. I give it an 8 out of 10. And I do question the ethics of the way it was made. And I question the ethics of what's portrayed. I don't believe that, you know, for example, the way these people are, some of these protagonists are pretending to be contrite about what they did is real. So there's a fodder for, you know, 10 hours of discussion about it. And I think from that perspective, as a you know, as a historical documentation of an important film, I think it's pretty vital.
Yeah, I'm with you, Yasti. I think this is an important story to watch so you know what went on and the repercussions of that and how people live today and how these events change people's lives and those around them. And, you know, I could go on about it's important for us to know about these things and watch these things and document these things so they never happen again. I know that's impossible, but it's really important for us to acknowledge these things so we try stopping them from happening. So for that reason alone, I think this deserves at least an 8 out of 10. But like you, Joe, I mean, I don't want to make people upset by watching it.
Yeah.
Because it's really difficult subject matter to watch. And it's bizarre, to your point, Yasti. More importantly, I worry about the lives of the filmmakers.
I do.
Because I think if this film goes mainstream and it does keep getting the buzz it's getting, then I worry even more about what's going to happen next. So not a film I enjoyed, but I think it's a really important story for us to know about.
There it is, The Act of Killing. A movie unlike anything that I've seen. And honestly, I think if I knew the way that it would make me feel, I probably wished I would rather hadn't seen it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I really wish that I hadn't had the experience of watching it. It's so weird how it's like affected me. But anyhow, let's move on to something a little, well, I guess it's not lighter-hearted, but
I think it's
historical.
Lighter.
Yes. Historical, more recent. Well, no, same time period, really. So we're going to review the movie Lee Daniels, The Butler.
I think Yasti needs to give his explanation of why it's called Lee Daniels, The Butler, again.
So, yeah, why is it not just The Butler, Yasti?
So from what I've read, the movie was originally called The Butler. Everything was fine. It was going to be released. And then 6 to 8 weeks before the movie was going to be released, I think it was Warner Brothers or Paramount who sued the makers of The Butler, claiming that it was an infringement of a movie that they had in their vaults, which was made in the 20s, a short film called The Butler, which was made in the 20s. And they said the movie violated you know, the copyright. And so essentially the filmmakers were held hostage. At one point they were considering delaying the release of the movie because they couldn't agree on a title. And eventually they were able to find a loophole by attaching the director's name at the start by calling it Lee Daniels as the butler. It did not infringe on the copyright. So really bizarre that they had to do that. Like, as if somebody's going to confuse this movie with an obscure short film from the 20s that people don't even know about.
From the 20s?
I believe so, yes.
Right, because Oprah wasn't even born then.
Right.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it was so old. Copyright law's out of hand. Copyright law should only have actually ever applied over, like, I think 40 years or 50 years, but the studios and Disney actually is the
probably
biggest perpetrator. Disney made it so that these copyrights could be extended and extended and extended so that they could keep really re-releasing Snow White for years and years and years. But I just think it's horrible. The whole purpose of copyright is to give somebody some protection for a while, but then we all should be able to quote Snow White and use clips from it and all sorts, just like a classic text, but... Ugh.
Well, I mean, I understand. I mean, they want to prevent me from making a movie called Star Trek, you know, my brother's mole or something, you know. You
know? I want to see that movie.
You want to see Star Trek, my brother's mole? You know, so I understand that, but this is just taken to a bizarre extreme.
Yeah, lawyers making money. Anyway, the movie is about the story of a White House butler who served 8 American presidents over 3 decades. The film traces dramatic changes that swept American society during this time, from the civil rights movement to Vietnam and beyond, and how those changes affected this man's life and family. Movie stars Forrest Whitaker, Robin Williams, John Cusack, Alan Rickman, James Marden, Liev Schreiber, Oprah Winfrey, of course, and
Lenny Kravitz, other people that Cuba I'm Gooding sure Jr.
all tied their name to this movie for seemingly good reason. Lee Daniels, of course, is the director of Precious from a couple of years ago, and he did the movie called The Paperboy, which we haven't seen, and the movie that you've seen, but we haven't seen
Shadowboxer. Bizarre movie, yes.
So, unfortunately, Yasti and I couldn't make this screening, so Rashmi, you were the only one.
I was movie wallahs for a week by myself.
You are. Represent.
So, despite the complicated title, and I kept calling this The Waiter, and then... Anyway, just didn't stick in my head. Lee Daniels, the butler. Despite the complicated title, this is a film that's worth your time. This is emotive, educational, and an important story about an amazing man's journey into manhood and all that comes with it. I really enjoyed this movie.
Wow. I'm surprised. Because, you know, I think this director is not known for keeping things in control. He cannot help but be excessive and over the top and just bizarre. I mean, his previous work has been so marked by excess that I'm surprised that he has made this mainstream a movie.
Yeah, and I wouldn't say, Yasti, it's so much that it's mainstream, but it is very traditional narrative. Mm. It's a really great story, and I think I was saying to you guys before, if you haven't grown up in the US, I think it's an important story to watch because it really tells you about Black history in this country. And I think I walked out with a really nice appreciation of the whole race discussion, why things are the way they are, what the tensions are, how long they've been around, how new everything is still. I mean, I think I was shocked that you know, I guess the abolishment of slavery happened a long time ago, but the segregation, things that we complained about in South Africa, you know, in the 80s.
Equality didn't happen here until the 50s or 60s.
Correct. Well, it happened, but did it really happen? I mean, it happened on paper, but did it really happen in people's minds? You know, those people are still alive today, really. Yeah. So people have still lived in both worlds. So from that point of view, this is a really important story, but it's done in a very nice way, which is having this constant, which is this character who's the butler, and it's based on someone's true life story. This person actually existed. And what I like about it is that it's really two stories in one. So it's really a good story about generations and how the time we're born in really impacts our attitudes and our life, even though we're members of the same family. So it's done beautifully, I think. Is it manipulative a little bit at times? But not as much as you'd think. I was expecting to go in and kind of have every cliche thrown at me. And there are a few cliches, but they're done with a light touch.
And it moves along briskly. I mean, it's not like one of these History Channel stodgy
affairs. No, it doesn't go on forever. And you don't even realize that you're covering that many decades in a short period of time. So it's got good pacing.
One of the things I didn't like about Precious was how kind of overly stylized it was. Is this more traditional, or is Lee Daniels kind of, you know, hitting you in the face with, you know, strong, bold images and sounds and visions?
It's very traditional, and it's done very well. And the production, you know, we always say production. I mean, this goes through a number of decades, and I think this is why, you know, Oprah and Forest Whitaker will both be up for Oscars.
Wow,
because
Oscars.
Yeah, definitely. This film is Oscar all over it because it's an important story. And then I think the fact that they've got an important narrative to tell and they're acting over a number of periods, so there's that whole aging process. They've done a really good job. So they've done a really good job of keeping in with every time period, which is quite interesting to watch.
Is Oprah in the movie a lot, or is it kind of a
she's in the movie
a
lot.
Is it a starring role?
Yeah, it's a starring role. I mean, she's probably going to get Best Supporting Actress, I would say.
Interesting that she came back to acting, nomination. Given where she is in her life and her career at this point. It doesn't make a lot of sense for me, other than perhaps that this movie was, you know, going to get a lot of hype, or maybe she was in this movie to cause a lot of hype. I mean,
maybe a bit of both.
Yeah, I mean, she's, you know, she clearly believes in Lee Daniels as a filmmaker, because if you remember, after Precious was made, it was a very small film, and she saw it and she liked it enough and she wanted to get the word out that she gave her, you know, she got producer credit on the movie just so that she could get her name out. And, you know, I think she's a very canny person. She's probably one of the most, you know,
the smartest,
yes. One of the most powerful and the most recognizable females in the world. And so, you know, she doesn't lack for, you know, if she chooses to, she could be in movies, but I think she's very canny in the kinds of roles that she picks. And, you know, she obviously most memorably was in The Color Purple, which was also a pretty important story that Steven Spielberg directed, for which she was nominated for an Oscar. And I think with this story, she probably was able to find, you know, again, that right balance of something meaningful.
Yeah. And you know, I think in the wrong actor's hands, someone could really overplay this role, but I was surprised at how nuanced she played it. She didn't overplay it. You know, there are some parts which call for, you know, a lot of drama. She didn't overplay it as such. And I kind of forgot I was watching Oprah Winfrey, if that makes sense.
Right.
Wow, that's an
accomplishment.
Yeah. I forgot I was watching, you know, Oprah, the media mogul.
Wow.
She was good at playing, you know, the actress that she was supposed to.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Very nice. The other nice thing I liked about this is it had so many people playing different presidents, and they did it really, really well. And some of them were only on screen for maybe like 5 or 10 minutes or two scenes. But like Robin Williams really stands out to me. He did a great job of playing Eisenhower. And then I think it's
Jane Fonda plays.
Yes, Jane
Nancy
Fonda
Reagan.
Plays Nancy Reagan.
Oh, wow.
James Marsden plays
Kennedy.
JFK. Yeah.
No, that's McConaughey.
No.
No.
Oh, it says McConaughey played JFK.
No.
It was Marsden.
Yeah, no, I'm on Tomatoes. Yeah. It's coming up as McConaughey. So, is McConaughey in it?
No.
That's so bizarre.
Maybe he was at some point.
No,
oh,
I didn't see.
Maybe they switched him or something.
That's
anyway.
Really
oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So no, he was very good. And I love that it's such a historical, like a archive of information, you know, and, you know, it has the right amount of events that happened in all of these presidents' lives, but how it affected the kitchen help, like the staff. And it talks about, you know, gender, and it talks about race, and it talks about attitude. It very good. Very, very good.
It seems like the ultimate upstairs downstairs, you know, in the
yeah.
White House and
yeah,
you know, the president versus the staff.
It does. I mean, I think I'd sum this up by saying I left the film feeling like I felt after I watched The Help, and that satisfied, educated, and entertained.
Mm. Were you as moved as The Help? Because I was very moved.
Yeah, I was moved in this.
I thought The Help was too manipulative.
So I would say this is probably slightly less manipulative. I just think it's a really important story to watch.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I would probably give this one. An 8 out of 10.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've been wanting to see it. I wanted to catch it this weekend, but didn't get
it. It kind of came from nowhere. I mean, I remember not hearing anything about this movie until a couple of weeks ago, and then it was released, and so I don't know. Maybe I missed all the hype, but...
No, I agree with you. I didn't really hear a lot about this.
I wasn't expecting to see a movie with this many famous actors in it.
Yeah.
Just pop up out of nowhere. I would have expected there would have been a lot of build-up. But
there's even, like, 2 scenes with Mariah Carey, and I don't know what she's doing in this movie.
No, she was, of course, famously in Precious as well, remember?
Yes.
She was the social
worker.
Right.
That's right.
She had a mustache.
That made sense. Yeah. In this it didn't make sense.
Obviously buddies with Lee Daniels.
Yes.
Yeah. This one, it didn't make sense.
Okay. Well, let's wrap up our podcast for today. Mail at moviewallers.com. Let us know what you think. Twitter.com/moviewallers and Facebook.com/moviewallers as well. Until our next episode, it's Too Many Movies, Too Little Time. A good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.